Nantucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. This is Will Hampson filling in for Jeff. Appreciate the chance to join you, if only for an hour here, to close out your Friday. Always good to be with the great people of South Alabama, with Dalton, with all of the team. The best of the best here. And so while they only give me an hour, that's, I guess, all that they trust me for, and probably rightfully so. Appreciate being with you guys here. We're going to gonna get right to it. Want to bring on Mike Yaffe, who is, of course, legendary radio host in North Alabama, in Tennessee, all over the place. Yaffe, how are you today?
I'm good, man. Legendary. I like that.
Uh-huh. All over. Syndicated, national. I mean, just the whole thing. It is, it's good. It's an honor to have you. Appreciate you joining. A lot going on here, Yaffe, and frankly, I'm hoping you can educate me a little bit here. I need to vote soon. I'm going to be voting absentee, and so need to figure out some of that. Who I'm going to fill in here. Obviously, a lot of good races up and down the ballot. I want to start with the Senate race. Obviously, a lot going on here. The president has come in, has endorsed Barry Moore. The polling seems to say that it's pretty tight right now. Is that kind of your sense of this? I mean, is this truly anyone's race to win, or do you kind of see someone in the driver's seat here?
I don't know if I see someone in the driver's seat. I think Barry Moore probably is in the lead. The Trump endorsement means something. But I think, you know, Steve Marshall, apparently Jared Hudson still have a chance. I don't want to count them out. I have no reason to doubt this poll other than maybe it's a little surprising. But nothing in the poll that to me seems like, oh, this is totally wrong.
Yeah, I mean, super interesting that we're this late here. With so many races really undecided, I think you kind of look across the board. My take on this, Yaffe, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I've seen this in other races in other super conservative districts and states across the country, where a lot of undecideds and the Trump endorsement seems to be the factor that kind of moves a lot of voters late. If you're still undecided at this point, you're either waiting to be bombarded by more TV ads, or you're kind of looking for something that's going to move you one way or the other. And I think, obviously, in this race, with a lot of undecided still, I think that Trump endorsement is what's going to likely move a lot of these voters in the end. Do you kind of agree with that?
I would agree with that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in. I mean, anything's possible, but it seems like that would be a difference maker.
And that's the hurdle, right? I mean, if you are one of the other campaigns, if you're Jared Hudson, who has a great story, obviously. I mean, former Navy SEAL, has done a lot of work fighting human trafficking. But at this point, the story's kind of out there, right? And same thing with Steve Marshall. I mean, at this point, you obviously know his record as Attorney General. You kind of, you know, if you were going to be a Marshall guy, you're probably at this point a Marshall guy. And that's where I'm looking at this and seeing, I just don't necessarily see what these other guys have that can move the needle late with a lot of these undecideds. Barry Moore's got it, right? He's got the thing. He's got the Trump endorsement. And so, you know, as I'm kind of looking at it, I wouldn't be surprised, Yaffe. No, I certainly don't expect this. If I were a betting man, I would not, you know, say that this is the likely outcome. But it wouldn't surprise me if Barry Moore wins outright on May 19th. If he does get that 50% plus one, would that shock
really?
You? Would that be a crazy? Is that crazy of me to say, Yaffe?
I don't know if it's crazy, but I don't know if it's likely. I mean, the polls would have to be very wrong, put it that way.
I don't know if they would have to be very wrong, though. I think you just have to have that large chunk of undecided voters going to the Trump-endorsed candidate. I think that's really what would move the needle late. I mean, if you have what are we seeing in these polls? I mean, 30 to 40% undecideds. I think a large chunk of that is going to end up going to Barry Moore. I think that the Trump-endorsed guy is going to get a large chunk of the undecided votes, and it could happen. If he's polling at 25% right now, it wouldn't shock me if he got 25% of undecideds to break late for him. I think it could certainly happen. I think it's something, again, I wouldn't put my money on it, but it wouldn't necessarily shock me to see that be the outcome. But let's get into some other races here, Yaffe. Obviously, a lot of other stuff going on. Have you been surprised at kind of the – and I want to be careful how I say this, but John Wall obviously got the Trump endorsement, and it has not seemed to be kind of the rocket ship that it was for Barry Moore. Has that been surprising to you to see that he with a Trump endorsement in a down ballot race, he really hasn't been able to kind of separate himself from the field?
Yeah, I am surprised by that. Have you seen any ads, though, with him in it yet?
No, I've seen
nothing. He's raised a lot of money, but I can't think I've seen any real advertising.
Yeah, I'm with you. And my guess, and it would be interesting to see this, but how saturated that Trump endorsement is, meaning how many people actually know. I mean, obviously, a lot of, talk radio listeners, people who are super tuned in, are obviously very well aware of that fact. But the average kind of rank and file voter, do they know that John Wall is endorsed by Trump? And it'll be interesting to your point. I mean, he's got over $1 million. He's raised a lot of money. He really hasn't spent much of it. At what point does he start to kind of go all in? Spending that money, alerting people to that Trump endorsement, and as we've said, is that Trump endorsement is that kind of the Trump card there? I mean, is that the ace in the hole? And I would guess that it probably is. Wouldn't you agree, Yaffe?
Well, mostly because it's not one of those high profile positions. I mean, maybe it should be, but lieutenant governor, people aren't thinking about that maybe as much. So if they're like, okay, I got to vote for someone for this, they see a Trump endorsement, I think it could make a difference.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with that. Are there any other kind of down ballot races that you are keeping an eye on? I mean, obviously, attorney general, kind of way down ballot here, Yaffe. But obviously, we're very aware of just how important that position is, right? Especially, obviously, we know that the Trump presidency ends in 2028. We saw how important it was to have a really strong attorney general during the Biden administration. Now, heaven forbid something like that happens and Republicans lose the White House post-Trump. Your attorney general will have at least 2 years, if not more, of having to kind of fight the Washington Democrat swamp there. So a super important position that doesn't seem like it's getting as much attention. But they're on TV. You've got Jay Mitchell on TV. Catherine Robertson is on TV. So you do have some heavy hitters there. What is your take on that attorney general race? Is that kind of for sure headed to a runoff? Is that kind of your thinking, Yaffe?
Probably. I mean, you're right. You're seeing a lot of ads, and recently they've been kind of going after each other pretty tough. And you've had outside groups, and I think because it's the importance of that, but I also think because it's close, there doesn't seem to be one person really running away from it. For between the two of them, it's very close.
And
so
that's
why that one's kind of interesting. Not only some of the ads going out against some of the candidates and some of the stuff there, the mudslinging, but also because it's still close.
And to your point, Yaffe, this was an interesting race. The Senate race still hasn't really gotten that, down and dirty. It really hasn't gotten super negative. Now, who knows? Obviously, if it stays close, I think some of the candidates are going to have to start taking some shots. But it stayed pretty cordial. That attorney general's race got pretty nasty pretty quick. I mean, they really started going at it kind of right out of the gate. Was that surprising to you, or is that, just kind of some good old-fashioned Alabama politics there?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I think it's good old-fashioned Alabama politics in a way. I think what was more surprising to me was back to the lieutenant governor's race, how Wes Allen came out swinging immediately. As soon as John Wall got in, he went after Wes Allen went after John Wall pretty hard. So I guess, you know, that can happen, and it, a lot of times that's to do with how close a race is.
Absolutely. And I think also, I mean, again, you see a Trump-endorsed candidate hop into the race here and understand that that probably catapults him, if not into the lead, at least into the, you know, the top-tier conversation. And so I think Wes Allen, rightfully so, understood he had to kind of take some shots early to try and define John Wall. But it will be interesting because I don't remember a cycle, Yaffe, where I've been involved in politics here in the state of Alabama, where so many races felt like they really were just complete toss-ups. Obviously, the 2018 cycle, we had a lot of good races. You had Twinkle running against Will Ainsworth for lieutenant governor. The attorney general's race was wide open after Steve Marshall had been appointed. I mean, you had a lot of good stuff, a lot of intrigue. You obviously had Senate races in 2020 and 2022 that were competitive. But it is really interesting to me. I think voters have a lot to look at and decide here coming into the next couple weeks. And now that voting is open, there are people voting absentee across the state. What do you kind of think, Yaffe? I mean, what do some of these candidates have to do to set themselves apart in the last couple weeks here running up to Election Day?
Ooh, that's a really good point. I think for some candidates, like a John Wall, it's just getting the message out there. You know, you can't – he's well-known in political circles. I don't know if he's well-known by the main public, the main voting public. So you got to go out there and really get that message. You talk about how it seems kind of wide open. I think it's because there aren't incumbents. You know, Tuberville is the only one with the race where it's secured. But in the Senate race, you don't have an incumbent. The Attorney General, you don't have an incumbent. The Lieutenant Governor, you don't have an incumbent. I guess State Auditor, you kind of do. But, you know, I think that's what really makes it interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other interesting thing is obviously a lot of these people have been involved in some capacity. But, like, John Wall's a perfect example, right? And this is no knock on John Wall or the job he's done. But, like, the average rank and file voter, obviously people that are super involved with Republican politics understand the job of the GOP chairman and all of that. But like the average rank and file voter who votes fairly religiously but is not day to day involved in politics, they don't have any idea what a GOP chairman is doing.
Yeah.
And frankly, they don't have any idea whether John Wall's done a good job or not. And again, that's no knock on John Wall. It's just a matter of fact that there are a lot of people out there who vote. They're very solid voters. They're very conservative, but they're not covering this stuff day to day. They're not watching the intricacies of the Alabama GOP. They're not going to the foofy dinners or voting at the executive committee. They're just average people who they don't tune into politics day to day. How do you know if John Wall's done a good job as the Alabama GOP chairman, right? We really haven't, you know, won any major races. We haven't lost any major races. I mean, it's just kind of is what it is. Alabama is conservative. It's a solid state. And so I really think it's tough for a lot of these voters as they're trying to sift through a lot of this information. Obviously, we have the luxury, Yaffe. We do this all the time. We're heavily invested. But the average person, they don't know. They don't know what a lot of these people have been up to. They don't know if Katherine Robertson has been doing a good job as second in command in the AG's office. They probably didn't even know that there was an AG's office. They just knew there was an AG. I mean, a lot of these people, I think, just don't necessarily know. So wrapping it up here, Yaffe, 30 seconds. But how do you cut through a lot of this noise?
Well, I think that's why, at least in lieutenant governor and stuff, that's why the Trump endorsement was so key. But he's just got to remind people. I mean, he's just got to get his name out there as much as possible and remind people that's what's happening, that he is the Trump-endorsed candidate.
Absolutely. Yaffe, we appreciate you joining. If people want to check out your shows across all of your states that you're active in, where can they find you?
Just like the Yaffe Facebook page, follow me next at Yaffe, Instagram at Yaffe Live, and it's spelled Y-A-F-F-E-E. You should know that,
Mike. Yaffe. Appreciate you as always. Yeah, that's right. The people should know it's Y-A-F-F-E-E. Appreciate you joining. We're going to get a quick break in here. We'll be right back here on the Jeff Poor Show.
See the stars light up the purple sky. Feel that lonesome chill.
to the Jeff Poor Show. This is Will Hampson filling in for Jeff. Always appreciate the chance to be with all of you. Super excited for some of these races. And it really is interesting seeing how tight they are. I think it's truly anybody's ball game in a lot of these races. And they make a big difference. Again, who your attorney general is, let's just hypothetically say, now I don't even want to put this out there, but let's say that Gavin Newsom does become the 48th president of the United States. Who your attorney general is here in Alabama, pretty darn important. It's going to be a pretty big deal. Who is there to push back against all of the radical things that will be coming from Washington, D.C.? And frankly, no matter who it is, as we've seen, there are some bad things that are passed even when Republicans are in control. The United States Senate, not the most conservative body in the world. And so a lot of these positions matter. They're a big deal. And I always find it interesting when I've been doing, you know, races like Rick Scott, for example. Senator Rick Scott in Florida is a huge believer in spending money early because of what you're seeing here, right? How do you, if you're a down ballot race, if you're running for attorney general and you've got to deal with a lieutenant governor's race that's super competitive, you've got to deal with a U.S. Senate race that's super competitive, it's tough to cut through that noise. And I think that's the thing I would be worried about if I'm someone like a Steve Marshall, if I'm pulling a little bit behind and I don't have that silver bullet of a Trump endorsement. There's a lot of noise. How do you cut through that when everything else is going on, right? If you're someone like a Pam Casey in that attorney general's race, who I think is right in the thick of it, I think she absolutely has a good shot to win this, but she's going to be outspent by those in her race, the other two opponents running for attorney general. She's going to be outspent by those running for lieutenant governor. She's going to be outspent by those running for U.S. Senate. There's only so much airtime. There's only so much you can kind of cut through at this point when everyone is out there and up on TV. And so you look at some of these campaigns, a lot of them have declined on early spending. Say what you want. Again, I'm not saying there's a right or a wrong. Every campaign has to figure out what to do with the resources that they have. But look at, you know, for example, the 2022 U.S. Senate race here in Alabama. Had Mo Brooks spent some money? Had he spent $500,000 on TV while he was up by 40 points? Katie Britt probably never has room to maneuver. She probably stays in the low single digits. She probably does not have the ability to turn in the performance that she did. She obviously was always going to outspend him. And once everything kind of started getting going, it was a little bit too late. It was too late for Mo to ramp up and be able to do anything. When Katie Britt was spending $4 or $5 million and he had $1 million, there was just only so much. He couldn't respond. And if he did respond, it was 5-1 on TV. That's tough. And so a lot of these campaigns, you're getting into crunch time here. But as we know, sometimes the game can be won early, right? You have the ball at the end of the first half. It's the second quarter. You're driving down the field, and you have to decide, I'm up 7-0. Do I take a knee, or do I try and score again and put this game a little bit out of reach? It seems like a lot of these campaigns have decided we're going to take a knee, and we're going to try and win it in the fourth quarter and hope that that the game is still in hand at that point. But sometimes it's not. And I think if you're a Steve Marshall and you look back at this race come May 20th, and you've lost or after the runoff, I think you're going to be saying, geez, we had the ball at halftime. I kind of wish I would have gone for it. I kind of wish we would have made that last minute drive, because maybe that would have changed the whole complexion of the game. It'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds here, but I think there are going to be some candidates that wish that they had gone for it. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back on the other side here on the Jeff Poor Show.
She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine.
Hey, I was country. Country wasn't too.
to the Jeff Poor Show. This is Will Hampson filling in for Jeff. Appreciate all of you for staying tuned in. Again, they only give me an hour, you know, sometimes, but I think that's plenty. They really shouldn't let me have a microphone any longer than that. But going to get to our next guest, who frankly should have a microphone all the time. He is one of the most tuned in people in Washington, D.C., Breitbart's Deputy Washington Editor, Bradley J. Bradley, how are you today?
Will, doing just fine. Great to be with you.
Always appreciate you joining. I want to get into it here. We've obviously got a lot going on in the state of Alabama, a Senate race, a governor's race that I think we know is pretty wrapped up. Down ballot races, very important. But there's a lot going on across the country, Bradley, and nothing, in my opinion, more important than what we're seeing in Texas here, because you have one of the most liberal Republican senators in John Cornyn, and someone who's pushed amnesty, someone who's pushed gun control, a lot of really, really terrible things, who came up for re-election and assumed that because he had been there forever, that this was going to be an easy race. And what we've seen is an actual conservative in Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton hop into the race. I think he's the hands-on favorite right now to win that race, Bradley. Is that kind of your sense? I mean, do you think that that things are looking good for Paxton at this point?
Well, two or three days after the runoff, it would have been unthinkable that Ken Paxton would be in the driver's seat. But it appears that that's where we are right now. He led with the plurality by only about a point after the runoff. He didn't reach the majority necessary to avoid the runoff. There were three candidates, and it was kind of seen as an overperformance for Cornyn, even though he was the incumbent. That's a reflection on the expectations of him, that he was not a strong candidate. Donald Trump came out and said, "I like both candidates. I will be endorsing one of them very soon and asking the other one to drop out to avoid a very expensive runoff." It's worth noting this was the most expensive primary in the history of the nation. Cornyn spent at least $70 million, by some estimates over $100 million, just to win a primary in which he was the incumbent senator, a four-term incumbent seeking a fifth term. Really wild. Ken Paxton, the day after Trump made that statement, I mean, everybody around D.C. was saying Trump's got the Truth Social post all drafted, ready to go to endorse Cornyn. He's going to do this favor to Thune and just move on and save that money fight. Ken Paxton came out and said, "You know what? I will consider dropping out of this race if John Cornyn, who claims to be this power broker in the Senate, will get the Save America Act passed in the Senate." Wow. The grassroots exploded. It totally upended that race. Everyone in Washington was talking about how this changed your trajectory, where it seemed like at any moment, at any second, Trump might officially endorse Cornyn and potentially in that race. Trump, here we are a month later. He has not made that endorsement. It does not appear as though he will. Polling since then has showed Paxton pulling away. Most of Rep. Wesley Hunt's, the third candidate in the primary, most of his support is going towards Ken Paxton. John Cornyn is continuing to spend a ton of money. I mean, the ads are just, I mean, he's a consultant's dream because he's just writing checks for them to do just some really stupid, useless things. I mean, just however they can spend money, they're doing it, whether it's effective or not. But it looks like Paxton is set to become the first challenger to a Republican in a Republican primary since 2012, since Richard Murdoch, I believe, beat incumbent Senator Dick Lugar to defeat an incumbent. We've still got a ways to go till that June primary, but Ken Paxton, the conservative in that race, is sitting very pretty, something that we would not have imagined just about a month ago.
And Bradley, I think really interesting, first and foremost, whoever came up with that idea for Paxton to come out and say, I will drop out if Cornyn will pass the Save Act, Save America Act. Whoever came up with that idea needs a pretty serious raise, and you can tell them I said so. Listen, the implications of this are huge, right? Because as we know, how Washington operates is that these senators act very liberally for 5 years. They do whatever they want. They push initiatives like Cornyn has for amnesty, for gun control. They pass these backroom deals selling out conservative voters across the country. And then they go every 6 years to their special interest friends and say, hey, we've done everything you've asked. Give us some cash. And they absolutely obliterate anyone that has the gall to run against them, convincing voters that they are very conservative, that they've done a great job. They destroy whoever runs against them, and they get another 6 years. I mean, this is the playbook. Richard Shelby did it for a long time. Lindsey Graham does it every 6 years. This is the playbook. But if it doesn't work here, if voters finally say, you know what, we don't need these people that are pretty liberal every 5 years, and then they kind of fool us into voting for them again when they're on the ballot. But if one of those incumbents, like a John Cornyn, loses, it puts everyone else on notice, right? I mean, this is a huge deal, and why I think that this is probably the most important race in the country right now.
Oh, well, I 100% agree that this is the most important race in the country. It's not the only race in which an incumbent senator could lose a Republican primary. Bill Cassidy in Louisiana is also down to two other candidates, to the conservative state treasurer, John Fleming, as well as the Trump-endorsed Julia Letlow, who I don't think anyone would claim is from the conservative wing of the party, yet Cassidy, of course, voted to convict Trump and impeach him years ago, and that vote is coming back to haunt him. So that one is kind of just its whole off by itself. But the Texas Senate Republican primary, you're exactly right. This it's already gotten Republican senators scared. If Paxton actually pulls it off, as I believe that he will, and he defeats Senator Cornyn in June, I think that you are going to have a horde of squishy, moderate Republican senators who are up for re-election in the next cycle and the following cycle after that, ask themselves very tough question of whether or not they want to go forward with risking losing a primary and actually having to campaign, especially in some of these red states that are going to be up in 2028, where the Republican primary is the only show in town, and they weren't anticipating having to actually debase themselves by campaigning. Campaigning is very beneath most United States senators, or at least as they like to think it. But this race could potentially do more to change the makeup of the Senate Republican Conference than any other in a long time. It's a huge deal, and that's why the grassroots, not just in Texas, but across the country, are so excited about Ken Paxton and what he might pull off here.
And Bradley, you make a great point. You're obviously very well connected into Washington. You understand kind of how all of this system works. But I want to ask you this, because there was reporting recently that Bill Cassidy in Louisiana went off on an NRSC call. He's furious that the NRSC isn't doing enough to protect him. Now, again, this is a guy who voted to convict Donald Trump in the Senate, upset that the Republican powers that be, the NRSCs, the SLFs, the Thune operations, that they're not doing enough to protect him. And the reason that they need to be protected is only because they're incumbents. And they believe that all of these systems in Washington should operate purely to protect incumbent Republican senators. What does this say? Because look, Bradley, if John Cornyn loses, which I think we both agree is a very realistic possibility, we have wasted over $100 million that could have gone to other races. We have tough competitive Senate races in North Carolina, in Georgia, in Michigan, in Ohio, in Maine, in Alaska. I mean, across the board, we have tough races that we have to dump resources in. Let's say we end up losing by 2 points in Georgia, and we spent $100 million plus trying to protect incumbents like Cornyn, like Cassidy, in some of these states in their own primaries. What does that say? I mean, how do we look at Republican voters and go, sorry, guys, we lost control of the Senate or we lost seats, but at least we tried to save Cornyn and Cassidy? I mean, how are these establishment groups whose job it is to hypothetically represent Republican voters and get more Republicans elected, how do they look voters in the eye and say, keep supporting us, guys, keep sending us money, when all they're doing is lighting resources on fire, trying to support candidates that Republican voters had said, we want nothing to do with them?
If I was a big money Republican donor, I wouldn't give a cotton picking dime to Thune or the Senate Leadership Fund or any of these leadership-aligned PACs that are just burning money in Texas. And this is the way that it works. They had kind of written Thune and the establishment Republicans in D.C., the others who have gotten behind Cornyn, the Tim Scott, who the NRSC chairman leading the Senate Republicans campaign arm. I know Katie Britt endorsed Cornyn as well. They wrote a check, and now they have to cash it. The way that they threatened these insurgent conservatives is they threatened to spend tens of millions of dollars to defeat them. That's what they did to Ken Paxton. They said, we're going to do whatever it takes to defend you. Now that they've made that promise, they kind of have to go through with it because they want their other incumbent Senate Republicans to run in 2 years and in 4 years. So they have to send that message that we will do whatever we can to defend you. And look, the dynamics have changed. They've always said that, you know, there's that old saw that in politics, money makes the mare trot. But look, it doesn't make the mule plow. And if you look at the current dynamics, money does not get you what it used to. There are so many other ways to reach voters besides just buying ads on television. There's Breitbart News, there's social media, there's all these ways, and it's benefited conservatives. Conservatives now don't have to rely on Fox News or CNN. There are other ways that they can get their news. Candidates can go directly to the voters now, and there are a lot of people in Washington that are scared. Money is still critically important, and look, they're in a single candidate in the nation who, if you offer it to them, is going to turn it down because it is still a critical part of campaigns. But you can't just hide behind money as easily as you used to. And I think that a lot of donors are going to begin asking themselves where their money can be most closely spent. Is it on dumping it into these terrible candidates? Maybe not on a case-by-case basis, but maybe they'll start asking themselves that a little bit more. Is it a better use of donors' money to spend into investing in party and get out the vote and everything that Scott Pressler and all these others are doing across the country and actually registering and mobilizing voters? Is that a better use of resources? In many cases, I think it's so. So the dynamics are swiftly changing. The ground is moving underneath a lot of these old school, old mule establishment Republicans' feet, and how well they adapt and how Washington adapts will tell the tale of how Republicans do, not just in the midterms coming up, but in the 2028 presidential election year and beyond.
Absolutely, Bradley. And I think the age of first of all, how powerful Breitbart has gotten is amazing. And I think that a lot of Republicans who kind of yearn for the days of the New York Times profile piece being the end all be all are really starting to see that ain't moving the needle anymore. Breitbart is. But I want to ask you this. We got about 60 seconds here. But let's say that we wake up after this primary, Ken Paxton wins, right? And you have all of leadership. I mean, you had the NRSC, you had John Thune, you had Katie Britt, all of these people all in against you. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars to slander, lie, all of that. And you, as Ken Paxton, wake up and you are now a United States senator. He owes none of these people anything. How terrifying is that? That someone could come in, that they spent that much money against, they went all in against him. It's kind of tough to tell that guy, "Oh, welcome. Now you got to fall in line."
Yeah, look, Ken Paxton's going to walk into Washington 10 foot tall and bulletproof. He won't owe anything to anyone in Washington. He'll owe his election to the grassroots, to the actual voters, the people in Texas. It's going to be, I think, a good day for conservatives if and when that day arrives.
Absolutely. Bradley, if people want to keep up with all the work you guys are doing at Breitbart, where can they find you?
We're on Breitbart.com. We're going to stay on top of this race. I've got plenty more coming in on this race in the coming days, so stay tuned. And I'm on X, Twitter, and Instagram at Bradley AJ.
Awesome. Bradley, we appreciate you as always, and we will be keeping a close eye on this race and everything else going on across the country. We're going to get a quick break in here. This is Will Hampson filling in on the Jeff Poor Show. We'll be right back.
Still on scene.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. Will Hampson filling in for Jeff here on this final hour of his Friday show. Hope everyone out there has a great weekend, and maybe Jeff will decide to do his full show on Monday. Who knows? Or maybe he'll do none of it. I don't know. But we will certainly see how that turns out, but always appreciate the opportunity to join you. Look, this is a big race. If you are a United States senator who has operated as a quasi-liberal, if you're someone who's prided yourself on leaking to the New York Times over actually doing conservative things, if you're someone who has made a career of trying to work with Democrats more than you work with your conservative Republican colleagues, then you're certainly on notice here. This is a big deal because, again, what you're seeing is the last gasp of conservative voters. Because if John Cornyn wins this race, what is there? What reason would you possibly have as a Republican to act as a conservative if you're going to win your race anyway? What leverage is there? Why do I care? Why do I care about those little pesky Facebook posters who post in their Trump group chats that I'm the worst when I'm going to win my race? I don't care. I don't have to listen to you people. I don't have to concern myself with what conservative voters in my state think if I'm going to be able to come in with $100 million and win my race anyway. That's what this is. It's a last stand. This is the Alamo for all conservatives across the country. Do I wish that maybe there was a little bit of a better candidate than Ken Paxton standing in the breach? Maybe. But for all of his flaws, he is what we got. He is a very conservative attorney general. He did, I think, a pretty good job. I think he's going to be a fantastic U.S. senator. And look, to Bradley's point, look at all of the establishment figures lining up to oppose Ken Paxton. Look at all of the people who have dropped millions of dollars on this race. And look, if you are a Republican who's donated to some Republicans in your state, that money is now being used on Cornyn too. This is a big deal. And I think he's going to get across the finish line. I think Ken Paxton will win. And I think it'll be a great day for Republicans. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This is Will Hampson filling in for Jeff Poore. We will see you on Monday.